Thank you very much. Mary Andrenga, thank you for serving as chair of my campaign, and I think you all know she's going to be the first woman president of the National Manufacturers Association. We're so proud of you and what you do for Vermeer and for industry, and it's great to see such a wonderful turnout here for the Association of Business and Industry. I go back a long way with this group, back to when you were called the Iowa Manufacturers Association. And I worked with you way back when I was running for lieutenant governor to reform the unemployment compensation law and stop some of the abuses that were going on in that system. That was one of my platform items then. And then I had the opportunity to work with you, as Mary mentioned, when I was governor before. But this is a very critical time in our state's history. The state of Iowa is facing the worst budget deficit in the state's history. We have the highest unemployment we've had in 24 years. And we have a governor that thinks the answer to every problem is go out and borrow more money. Sounds a lot like what they're doing in Washington. And it isn't working. In fact, I thought it was really pretty funny. He lost his briefing book. The briefing book showed that in every place that he went, the unemployment rate went up after they passed this big bonding plan instead of down. And, you know, it's also saddling the people of Iowa, the taxpayers of the state, with having to pay interest over the next 20 years. That's not the answer in terms of creating business. We know that the answer is to reduce the tax and regulatory business so that entrepreneurs and business will feel confident to invest and create jobs in Iowa. That's how you create jobs in this state. I can tell you, and I know, having been to some of your meetings over the last few years, you've been fighting a defensive battle trying to stop these job-killing labor bills. Prevailing wage, a bill that I vetoed in 1984. 9 states have repealed it. No state has passed it since that time, and yet they came within one vote of pushing it through the House of Representatives. Thank God for all 44 Republicans and 6 Democrats that had the courage to buck Culver and the Democratic leadership and stop that. And I want to congratulate your association. I can tell you, help is on the way. Change is coming. I am not going to let that ever become law when I'm governor of this state. That is the wrong thing to drive up construction costs. Repeal of the right to work law, one of the fundamental things to attract business and jobs to Iowa, that too was threatened. Doctor shopping under workers' comp, which would drive up your costs. Elimination of federal deductibility. We're going to already see federal taxes go up when the Bush tax cuts expire. And here they're trying to put a double whammy on Iowa taxpayers by taking away your right to deduct the federal taxes on the Iowa tax return. All of those ideas, along with expanding public employee collective bargaining, are dead when I become governor. Instead, we're going to look at things to make Iowa better and more competitive. We're going to look at such things as cutting the top tax rate on the corporate income tax. Now, I know that Iowa has a single factor corporate income tax based on sales, and that's an advantage. I've sold many companies on Iowa saying, you know, you can add all the payroll and property you want in Iowa. We don't use that three-factor formula that penalizes it for adding payroll and property in Iowa. So locate your business here. But our rates, and other states have copied our single factor formula, and so we're not as advantageous as we used to be in comparison to other states. But the top rate of 12% is the highest in the nation. I want to cut it in half. I want to make us more competitive by reducing that tax rate and making Iowa more attractive for manufacturing and for business. Commercial property tax. You know, on the property tax side, we value farmland on productivity, use a 5-year rolling average, and we did that because of what happened in the 70s with that inflation on farmland values, and we didn't think it was fair to farmers to pay on market value when it just was not, it was just really an oppressive rate So we went to productivity, and then we tied residential to it. We have a rollback, and residential is presently taxed at less than 50% of market value. And then when I was governor, as Mary mentioned, we got rid of the tax on machinery and equipment. So for major capital-intensive manufacturing, we only tax the building, not the equipment. And that's been a huge advantage. I remember IPSCO Steel was the poster child for that. And it was a long, hard battle, but we got that through. And in fact, I remember even before IPSCO Steel, Cedar River Paper, we had made an exemption for them in Cedar Rapids the year before. But we not only got IPSCO Steel and Cedar River Paper, we got PMX and right here, Barilla Pasta and Ames, Bunge, and there's dozens of others that are located in Iowa because we got rid of that tax on machinery and equipment. But you know, the one class that we haven't done anything about is commercial property tax. Governor Culver, when he ran 4 years ago, said, I'm going to do something about it. He did. He appointed a commission. The commission had several meetings. They came up with some recommendations, and they were totally ignored, and nothing has been done. We're going to change that. When you know the way we went about getting rid of the tax on machinery and equipment, we got rid of it for the new, and then we phased it out over a period of time for the others. Well, I think that's an approach that worked effectively. I had David Lyons, as Director of Economic Development, work with local governments to work out an equitable formula for doing that to protect local governments from a loss in revenue as we got rid of that tax. That's what I want to do. I want to tax it only at, say, 60 or 65% of market value for the new commercial property, and then phase it down to that for the existing over a 4 or 5 year period to make us competitive with other states in our region. I believe that can be a real benefit for commercial businesses and commercial buildings in our state. So those are a couple of things that I think we can do. I think it's also important to have a pro-business governor that's proactive in going out and calling on Iowa businesses to expand and grow and new businesses to locate in the state. I've done that before. I will do it again. And that's how I think we can achieve these very ambitious goals I've set. 200,000 new jobs in the next 5 years, raising family incomes by 25%, reducing the size and cost of government by 15%. And I want to look at what Mitch Daniels has done in Indiana. You know, compare Indiana with Illinois, Ohio, and Michigan, and they're all in big trouble. And they've all followed the Culver example of trying to borrow their way to prosperity. It doesn't work. Instead, what Mitch Daniels did, he came in and said, I'm going to reduce the size and cost of government and become more efficient and competitive. And he's been doing that for 6 years. Indiana's coming back. And that's a contrast to their neighbors. And we want to be like that. That's what I want to do in state government. And we want to do a thoughtful and systematic approach. In fact, Roger Underwood from here in Ames has chaired a group that I put together to help identify ways that we can reduce the size and cost of government. We want to do it in a thoughtful and systematic way. We want to use technology to better deliver services. We want to be able to do it with fewer people, and we want to do it in a more efficient way. Hopefully we can provide better services at lower. We know you've been doing that in business for years. Mary took me through Vermeer, and I got to see what you've done in Vermeer Manufacturing to become more competitive and to use the different approaches of reducing waste and becoming more efficient in the way you make things. And that's what we need to do in delivery of services in government at the state and local level. And that's what I want to do. And in education, it just sickens me to think that we have gone from being in the 1990s number one in educational achievement to now middle of the pack. Last year, NAEP test scores 2009, 8th grade math, we ranked 28th, 4th grade reading 26th. That's terrible. We need to again set high expectations. We need to have state standards. We need to do uniform assessments. And then we need to reward and recognize good schools. National Teacher of the Year, Sarah Wessling, is from Iowa. She is from Johnston. And she was at our Vision 2020 conference about a month ago. I asked her, how did you get to be the National Teacher of the Year? She said, well, I was able to improve my skills through a number of ways. She got a master's degree here at Iowa State University. She also went through the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards, very stringent assessment process, and she was able to improve her skills as an experienced teacher by doing that. Now, when I was governor, I had served on that National Board for Professional Teaching Standards for a while, and we had put in a stipend in place where the state would provide additional funding for every teacher that got National Board certification. But after I left, they cut that money out. And in 2009, they cut out the beginning teacher salaries, phase one of our three-phase educational excellence program. We got to quit just doing everything on a union seniority basis. We need to start rewarding excellence and people that are doing a good job in education. And that's the kind of thing that I want to do. Well, I am excited to be back on the arena, and I can say yesterday was a thrilling day. We had three really good candidates that ran spirited campaigns. I feel honored to have been chosen, to have gotten the Republican nomination for governor. I intend to work very hard to earn your support and your help, and we're going to need your assistance across the state to be successful in the fall. But I am encouraged and excited about it. I think we have a strong team of candidates for the state offices, attorney general, for state treasurer, for secretary of state. These are offices we haven't had in a long time. We haven't had the attorney general's office since 78. But how would you like to have a pro-business attorney general? I'd like to have an attorney general that would defend me when I do an item veto. I'd like an attorney general to defend the state of Iowa when we have a Defense of Marriage Act. I'd like an attorney general that would challenge Obamacare along with 20 other states to protect the taxpayers and businesses of the state of Iowa and the state from the imposition of these mandates and these additional taxes. We don't have that today. But there's a young woman named Brenna Finley who is an outstanding, intelligent, articulate, hardworking young woman, and I think she would make a great attorney general. Now, I'm running for governor, but the attorney general is the state's lawyer, and it's not fun to have your own lawyer not on your team. So that is an office I care about. You know, the treasurer candidate that won yesterday is the treasurer here of Story County, Dave Jamison, great guy. We got a young man from Council Bluffs, city councilman, lawyer that's running for Secretary of State. These are all quality, capable candidates. The candidates for Congress that were nominated yesterday in the three districts we don't have are great candidates. We've got great candidates for the legislature. And you know, this is a year that people aren't very happy with incumbents. And I haven't been in office for more than a decade. And I want to get rid of the present incumbent because he's driven the state of Iowa into the biggest budget deficit in history. And we need a governor that's going to restore not only the focus on economic development and education and jobs, but restore integrity and openness and honesty in state government. You consider what's happened in the last year in this state. The film office fiasco, which may cost us $20 or so million. And now we have just recently the Department of Aging and the director of that department who's acted like a dictator and muzzled the state long-term care ombudsman and other employees of that department and even the members of the commission. And then you have the Gracing and Gaming Commission, where the governor writes and insists that they ought to add four more licenses for gambling, and lo and behold, we find out that Peninsula Gaming gave $25,000 to a group of gambling promoters in Fort Dodge and then turned around and gave it immediately to Culver's campaign. And that's being investigated by the DCI and by a special prosecutor appointed by the Attorney General's office. This is starting to sound like Illinois. This is Iowa. We have always prided ourselves in open, honest, clean government. When Bob Rae was governor, he had a press conference. He used to start out and have a press conference a couple a week. And then he reduced it to one a week.
I continue that tradition of having a press conference every week, going to every county in Iowa every year, releasing my tax returns, and the open meetings and open records laws were enforced. Today, we have scandals involving also the, I hate to say this, but even the Iowa School Board Association. But these are tax monies that they're spending, and the public has a right to know how their money is being spent. And that's the reason why the School Board Association, the League of Cities, the Association of Counties, all of which have tax, use primarily tax money, they should be subject to open meetings and open records law. And the Attorney General's office has a division for consumer protection. I'm saying let's have a division that would enforce the open meetings and open records law. We don't have to add additional staff. They have over 100 attorneys in that office. Just designate a group that would have that responsibility so that any citizen, any taxpayer, anybody from the media that feels the open meetings, open records law has been violated could turn it over to them to investigate. It's time to reestablish honest, clean, open, transparent government in this state. I'm committed to doing that. That's what Iowans deserve. That's the tradition we've always had, and it's sickening to see the problems that are going on today. And I just want you to know, change is coming. We're going to prevent, we're going to change all of that. Thank you very much.
I would be glad to respond to questions. Do we have questions? Okay, well, that's okay too. Okay, down here. What have I learned from being away from politics? First of all, I've had a wonderful experience for the last 6 years and 3 months as being president of Des Moines University. So I've had to deal with the academic environment, higher education, and healthcare. And academics aren't the easiest people to work with, but actually I found this. That was my biggest challenge. How would the academics accept me as a non-academic as president of the university? And here's the way I approached it. I tried to be a real good listener. One of my vice presidents say, do most of your speaking off campus and listening on campus. Very sage advice. And what I tried to do is raise the visibility and respect and recognition of the school by going out and telling what Des Moines University is all about, but giving the deans the authority to oversee their colleges, and we have three colleges at Des Moines University, and then meeting on a regular basis with the faculty and with the students. And I found just one little thing. Des Moines University, we built a brand new student education center and it was well wired, and all of our students are issued a laptop computer when they start classes. But in the old building, the administration building, we had three theater-style classrooms and they weren't wired. And the students are in there all morning in classes and their computers are running down. So once a month I'd have lunch with the students and I asked the students what they liked and what they didn't like. And mostly they said good things, but they said, you know, our computers are running down because these classrooms aren't wired. So what we did is we got them some batteries to get through the rest of that year. And that summer we wired those classrooms. To this day, the students are so appreciative that we did that. Not that I gave the students everything they wanted, because they wanted the library open all night. Well, the library's open from 6:30 a.m. to midnight, and we'd have to staff it all night. So I said, no, we're not going to do that. It'd be, you know, we'd have to staff it, and you need to sleep sometime anyway. So we didn't do it. But if that's the biggest problem you got with students is they want the library open all night, you don't have too big a problem. These medical students, these healthcare students are intelligent, focused, caring people. I feel really good about the future knowing that our health is going to be in their hands. And so I learned a lot about that. And most importantly, I was able to hone my skills in terms of choosing the best people to be the provost, the vice presidents, the deans, and to give, and not to micromanage, but to give them the authority to do their job but then hold them accountable for achieving what the expectations were. And we grew the university, we grew the endowment, we got the Wellness Council of America and highest level award for what we did for wellness for faculty, staff, and students. We became a tobacco-free campus. We started the Glanton Scholarship for Minority Students, which has been a tremendous success. It's now got over $1.2 million in that endowed scholarship. And so it was a great experience. I loved what I was doing. But I'm watching the mess that's going on in state government. And every day it seems like it's getting worse. And people start coming to me and say, we need your experience and leadership to do this. And I tried to talk some other people into doing it. But I couldn't find somebody to do it. And the people kept saying, but you have the experience, and we know you've got the leadership ability, so you need to do this. And I love the state of Iowa too much to watch this continue, and so that's why I decided to get back in the arena and take on the challenge. And I don't regret it. I believe we can make a difference. I believe the best days of Iowa will be ahead of us, but we need to assemble a great team. We need to restore that focus on growth and jobs and restoring fiscal responsibility. And I will work with the auditor to see that we enforce the spending limitation. Dave Fisher's here. He did a great service for the state. He led the Committee to Reform State Spending, which became known as the Fisher Commission, came up with a whole program, get spending off autopilot, put in place these 99% spending limitations, set up the cash reserve and economic emergency account, and you know, we're going to accomplish it in 3 years. It was done in two. We enforced it. We kept it in place until I left office. That's why we had a $900 million surplus. That's why we were able to reduce taxes. And lo and behold, what happened after 1999? They started circumventing the spending limitations. Since Culver's been governor, 133 times in appropriation bills they put notwithstanding language and spent more than the 99% spending limitation. That's why we're in the trouble we are. Then they use one-time money for ongoing expenses, and it goes on and on and on. How do we solve it? Put together a 5-year strategic budget plan for the state. Insist on a 2-year biennial budget, and veto anything that isn't a 2-year budget. And then, if any appropriation language circumvents the spending limitations, veto the appropriation bill. That's what we need to do to restore fiscal responsibility. And I will do that with our CPA state auditor, David Vaught. We intend to go all over the state of Iowa. He's already done this and told the story about restoring fiscal responsibility, but he hasn't had a governor that's listened and worked with him. I will. I'm looking forward to doing that. Thank you very much.